quantum leap in resourcefulness. In part one, I wrote about the kind of challenges we all face when trying to define the human, material, information, and financial resources available to us. In small groups, we can estimate what is reasonable and possible simply by talking to people and seeing what they have on their plate. But as our projects get larger and more complex, if we can't properly quantify our resources, we end up flying blind. How can we match the workload demanded by the schedule to the supply pool articulated by some system of capacity management? The theory of constraints, TOC, by its very name, is a theory about how we come to understand what stops us getting more of what we want. It points to how we can more productively use what we have and know when and where to invest for a step change in performance. In the first instance, we need to quantify our capabilities in a way that a computer can store, enabling us to calculate load and capacity. Since TOC was invented by a physicist, let's call each task a quantum of work, a quantum being the minimum amount we need to articulate in our schedule. Just as any electrician knows exactly what a volt is, so must we come to know the conceptual categories we need to consider to carry out each quantum of work. Thus we have capability, the ability to perform or achieve certain actions or outcomes through a set of controllable and measurable faculties, features, functions, processes, or services. Resource, an asset capable of creating value through work, generally under the broad classification of human, material, financial, and information. Resource type, the classification of a resource using structured data as defined by the organization's taxonomy of resource types. Position, a role within an organization that belongs to a node in its hierarchy that has as a minimum a manager, a start date, end date, capability, and often but not necessarily associated cost and revenue. Position assignment, the assigning of a resource to any given position with matching capability and the requisite authority for no longer than the duration of the position. The assignment should either cost less than or deliver more revenue than the budget for that position. Roster, the days and times a given individual, team, or other resource will be available to do useful work. Schedule, a sequence of tasks that includes as a minimum each task description, predecessor, successor, resource type, effort by resource type, and duration. Schedule assignment, the assigning of a resource, resources, or a team to a task in a schedule. So what does a quantum of work look like? Let's imagine a position on a project for which a budget has been approved. There's an expectation of a start and an end date. The burn rate is X dollars per day. Multiply this by the total days of the position, and we get the total burn. Assignments are created when an assignee is recruited into a vacant position. In most cases, when someone joins a project, there is an induction period before useful work can be done. This so-called useful work is the scheduled load. It is the load that comes from the systems and tools used for work management. We should avoid scheduling a position to reach the normal capacity of an 8-hour day. Our schedule shouldn't require any sprint capacity, such as overtime or weekend work, to satisfy the demand. Incidentally, running at sprint capacity the whole time is a recipe for burnout. What, then, is the optimum number when we look at load versus capacity? Or put another way, demand versus supply? Before we can answer that question, we need to define how we will structure the data in order to define our resource taxonomy. In a typical engineering environment, that taxonomy would define the domain, the discipline within that domain, a specific skill within that discipline, a speciality if there is one, their level in the organizational hierarchy, frontline, supervisor, manager, and executive being the most common, and the organization, or perhaps P&L, they belong to. In many ways, this definition is no different from creating a code for an item of stock in a warehouse. Understand the code, and you know what the item is, where it belongs, how many of them there are in stock, what we need to do to get more of them, and so on. Defining capability in this way can be seen as defining a stop code for knowledge workers. There's no reason, then, why it couldn't equally be used to define a piece of equipment, such as a crane, or materials, such as electrical cable. Once we have this idea nailed, we can assign these codes to roles within a project or the organization, as well as to tasks in a schedule. If the same coding is used to define the capability of any given individual, who will likely have more than one capability, then we have satisfied the necessary and sufficient conditions of being able to establish a match between demand from our scheduling system and supply from our system of capability management. The implications are enormous. We can know reliably what can be done, by when, and for how much, at any level of the enterprise. Now you've done the difficult task of planning out the quanta of work and their sequence, you have a way of assigning resources to achieve your aims. Back to the earlier question. Your information should be designed in such a way that you can instantly report on all resource types where load versus capacity is greater than 80% over the next planning horizon. Why 80%? As a rule of thumb, if demand is greater than 80% of supply, you increase the risk of turbulence. Demand doesn't come in a neat line at 80% of capacity. There will be peaks and troughs. Running at 80% of aggregate capacity allows for a degree of smoothing. Thus, if the load is shown as less than 80%, it means you have resource capacity available to do useful work. If not, you need to get more supply. Once you have a good handle on the data, one way of tapping into existing capacity to solve the problem of resource bottlenecks is to query that data for anyone in the resource pool who has ever held similar position and establish where they are now. If they are still in the resource pool, establish their current assignment and test if their position can be backfilled. In other words, can someone else, a non-constraint, be assigned to the constraint's existing role and thus free them to do only that which only they can do? We call this the double only question. After all, constraints are simply resources whose demand outstrips their supply. Finding ready supply within your existing resource pool is a fine way of maintaining the rate at which value is created. If adding resources in the above manner is either not possible or not enough to close the capacity gap, you need to initiate your recruitment process. It's worth noting that backfilling is a lot easier than one thinks. The principle about constraints applies here. Where there is a constraint, by definition, non-constraints have capacity available. The productivity magic happens when non-constraints collaborate to support a focus on getting the constraints' priorities done at any given point in time. The flip side of looking for the bottleneck is to identify unconstrained positions, for argument's sake, all resource types, where load versus capacity is less than 50% over the planning horizon. List the names of all those people on the project whose assignment relates to the unconstrained positions. Ask if the unconstrained people have ever held a position or have a capability that could alleviate a current or future constrained position. If the answer is yes, then reassign that person to the constrained position. If no, the choice is either reskilling, training the person to do another job, or offboarding, take the person off the project team. Quantum work management probably sounds quite technical, and thinking through the details is not everyone's cup of tea. But this is a big issue within the domain of resource management and optimization. You can't afford the criteria for each quantum of work outlined above. They are implicit in your system. But if you deliberately name and tag them in your resource database and do it consistently, you'll be ahead of the game. There's simply no substitute for the discipline of applying your standards for planning, scheduling, and capabilities in a rigorous and proactive way. Applying TOC in this way is guaranteed to give you the quantum leap I promised in the title and sustainably deliver continuous improvement in business performance. At all levels of work, your people will know what they have to do and know that sufficient resources have been provided to get the work done on time and to quality. That goes a long way to fulfilling the criteria for just work, ensuring people are fairly treated while achieving the ambitious and worthy goals of the organization.